Welcome back to Old Millennials, a deep dive on shallow topics from the late 90s and early 2000s. I am one of your hosts, Emily.
And I'm Margot.
Well, we are today very excited because this week we grabbed our old people magazines from the late 90s and early 2000s and got to digging on the who's who of who was together. That's right, we're talking about the iconic couples of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Oh my God, am I Mario Lopez at the Grove? Because I feel like I'm on Access Hollywood circa the mid-2000s. That was extremely jaunty, Emily.
All of a sudden, I just felt like I was at my audition for E. And
you were possessed by the spirit of a People magazine at the airport from 2001.
Maria Menounos is in me today.
Gross.
God.
And also, you
not
better.
How I intended for that to
you
be.
You better hurry up and get your shit together because next week you're on the red carpet for the Oscars. So you better ask those hard hitting questions like, who did your dress?
Who did your dress? Who did your nails? Who did your hair? You know, really compelling stuff. Life changing, really.
Oh my God. Sorry. I should warn everybody. I'm even more hoarse than I normally am because last night I went to a friend's birthday party. She does this every year where we read an abridged version of a bad movie. And last night was Independence Day. And I had the honor and the pleasure of playing Randy Quaid's character. And apparently I interpreted Randy Quaid as Al Pacino, but louder. And so I screamed for so long. And my voice
But it's
is...
fairly accurate, right? Like, right? I mean, you know, he never just says a line in his movies. He yells them.
Like, I feel like I embodied the spirit of the commitment of the Randy
exactly
Quaid acting method.
You came, you delivered, you did exactly what you should have done. I understand. I'm glad you got some tea next to you to get through this episode.
It's extremely NPR on my side of the recording. But yeah, if you hear me clear my throat kind of in an annoying way, please know I'm trying my hardest. I also am getting over a sinus infection, so the two together, I'm like really true. I'm falling apart.
We've been out of commission this past month. I had a sinus infection / inner ear infection. I was on antibiotics a couple weeks ago. Now you have a sinus infection.
I'm on that good old Sudafed.
That's right.
Where my Fed head's at, baby. We are falling apart.
We really are. January, to me, felt kind of like a year.
I posted that meme on our Instagram. I think it was like on the 30th. Where I'm like, I can't believe there's one more full day. And it's of Danny McBride at the end of Tropic Thunder. And the caption is, this is how I feel at the end of January. And he's got like the neck brace on. He's like dirty. He has like a smile on his face, but you don't like, but a dead look in his eyes. And that's us.
That's us right now. That's us. It was a struggle to record today.
I don't even know how people do dry January on top of just surviving January.
My dry January / whole 30 turned into a damp January, very quickly.
I think it was a whole 10 days.
I mean, food was, I was fairly good.
Those wings were great.
Those wings were really good. But the alcohol, that was, I tried.
It doesn't stop just because it has gone from 1 year into the next year.
I gave it the college try.
Which means she showed up hungover.
So I
don't know about you, but I was very obsessed with tabloids, especially around time when a lot of these couples were coming to prominence.
Yep.
For some reason, it was a little bit difficult. I wish I had kept all of those magazines, to be honest, because I felt like things went on for so much longer than what the internet is reporting to me when I was trying to do some research.
Yes.
Like, I remember Gwen and Ben being a much bigger deal and you know what, actually, they probably are, like, the longest, deepest dive that I do have because they have talked about each other, especially Gwyneth Paltrow, in the press in the years following, especially in the last couple of years where we have this wave of nostalgia for things that happened in the 90s. So I thought it was very interesting that, you know, it feels long in the moment, but you look back and you're like, oh, wow, they did it for like 2 years. That's truly astonishing.
I mean, I think the way it worked back then, it does, like, looking back at these relationships where it's like, oh, that was only 2 years. But yeah, I think the tabloids gave it that effect. And I think that, you know, speculation had these people in relationships way earlier than they actually started.
And I think it was before people were as media literate as they are now, could say that someone is pregnant and you would spend months. And there's not the internet, obviously.
Yeah.
So you'd spend months assuming that this person was pregnant. And every once in a while that'll happen. Like, that whole Dakota Fanning, Chris Martin thing that happened where everybody was, like, convinced she was pregnant.
Johnson.
Oh, what did I say?
Fanning.
Whoops. Not that one. My bad. Yeah, the other, the Johnson child was pregnant, and everybody was like, yep, she's definitely pregnant. She's definitely pregnant. 2 years later, where's that baby
where
at, everybody?
That baby? She's but been even, pregnant longer than Jessica Simpson at this point.
But even now, people try to... It's really interesting that we're doing iconic couplings right now, especially after that Brad and Jen photo that happened at the SAG Awards. How many times have they broken up, gotten back together, had twins secretly? He cheated on Angelina with her as a revenge bang. Like, obviously, we're all trained now to not believe any of that stuff. But without the internet, I also feel like a lot of, like you said, these couples were speculative fiction. But what I remember best are all of the paparazzi shots. Because
for sure,
as little as we knew about, say, Cameron Diaz and Jared Leto, I remember being incredibly invested in their relationship just based on photos alone. Zero info. They, like, hardly talked about each other in public.
And I think, like, back then, that was just such a, such a big deal. And I feel like in the time that we live in, where there's just been so much written about, like, feminism and intersectionality and all that, I think the way we approach celebrity couplings changed so drastically.
Sure, yeah.
Like, I'm going to later talk about Jennifer Aniston, and one of the things that I point out is that I think our obsession with her, at least society's obsession with her for so long, was like, if the most beautiful woman in the world can't keep her husband, then we're all fucked. But I feel like if this relationship had happened now, 20 years later, I don't think we would have this level of obsession.
I mean, the way that everybody read into that photo was bonkers. Yes. It was over a week of discourse.
Yeah.
People lost their minds, and the different interpretations of, like, that means they're getting back together, or this is, like, a strong woman saying goodbye to a guy who was a piece of shit to her. It's like, I am not that invested in that.
Or it's option C, where it's just like, guess what? They are cordial with one another. They're on civil terms. They have mutual friends, and they happen to see each other in an awards show. Like,
exactly.
And they don't loathe each other.
When you work in Hollywood,
15 years ago.
When you work in Hollywood, your exes are your coworkers. That's just how it goes.
That's just how it goes. And unless you're, like, dealing with, you know, some crazy, crazy, tumultuous divorce, they didn't have kids. They didn't have pets, I don't think. They just, you know,
didn't she have Norman at the time?
Maybe, but
that's her dog.
That's her dog, and I'll go into this. Their separation, for what the tabloids made it out to be, was very kind of chill when you really think about it.
Because they blew up that affair so bad. I mean, when they leaked those pictures, you can basically you can hear their hands ringing together and the maniacal laughter in the background. Like, this will finally do it.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of like the oh my God, Kristen Stewart and that director.
Oh,
it was like there were unsubstantiated rumors, and then there were, like, blind items, and then finally, like, the actual proof. It's just like when you are finally vindicated. They love to relish
they
in it.
They love it.
Except it's disgusting when tabloids do
and
it.
And when it was actually proven, at that point, they were so close to, I think they had just announced their separation or something. So while they maintained that, like, nothing had happened, really, really happened while they were still married, I don't think the timelines, well, they may have had, like, chemistry and all that. I don't think the timelines are as muddied and as blurred as the tabloids made them out to be, for sure.
Well, there's definitely some messiness that occurred.
For sure. I mean, it's obvious, but it's definitely not to the extent, I think tabloids had Brangelina as a thing maybe 6 months before anything actually really did happen.
Right, and tabloids are very much, we need an evil person and a good person, and they need to be involved in some sort of triangle. It's very soap opera-y. But back in a simpler time, if you can cast your mind back, when Gwyneth Paltrow and Ben Affleck were dating, which they had an on-and-off relationship for 3 years from 1997 to the late 2000s, and they, oh God, I can't believe he's fucking coming up again, but they met at a dinner party hosted by Harvey Weinstein in 1997. Gwyneth Paltrow was fresh out of her relationship with Brad Pitt, where they were engaged.
Oh, yeah.
And in recent interviews, good old Gwyneth Paltrow has gone on to say that she mourned her relationship with Pitt for 5 years, ostensibly making Affleck a full-blown rebound.
Doesn't that suit him, though?
He doesn't deserve much more than that. They also, I think it was, like, a Bustle article, but they said that they had the chemistry of two dryer sheets.
I mean, it was that white.
He was as white as a bachelor season. They would go on to work together in Shakespeare in Love, but then broke up in 99, hence her awkward shout-out to him and her acceptance speech at the Oscars. But they got back together, at least publicly, not too long after Gwyneth Paltrow tricked Ben Affleck into starring in Bounce.
I had that on VHS.
Oh, my God. I don't even think I finished it. But I remember I got Bounce and Sliding Doors confused all the time, but I really liked Sliding Doors.
That's a good movie.
And so I would go into Bouncing like, yeah, that's Sliding Doors. I'm like, shit, no, wrong movie, fuck. Gwyneth Paltrow got Ben Affleck to take the role of a businessman who gives up his seat to a man on a flight that later crashes, and then Ben Affleck swoops in and then grief bangs the widow. She thought that he was more capable and that this role would really show off his acting chops.
But as the song says, I need you like Ben Affleck needs acting lessons.
Like most breakups, even amongst us normies, their demise was ultimately a culmination effect. First of all, the beloved Brad Pitt is a very tough act to follow, especially if you are Blythe Danner and R.I.P. Bruce Paltrow, who loved Brad Pitt and were sort of meh on Affleck.
Which, they got it right.
They're not wrong.
No.
I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow's gone back. She's backpedaled a little bit where she's just been like, yeah, no, they loved how intelligent he was, and they thought he was really nice, but maybe just, like, not in the right headspace, which is code for he was dealing with a drinking problem at the time, even then. As I was saying before, how Gwyneth Paltrow got Ben Affleck to agree to be in Bounce, she sort of also had an open disdain for his movie choices. In an article that I dug up from the New York Times, where it was an interview with Ben Affleck promoting Bounce, she was interviewed for some sound bites, and she directly calls out his roles as him coasting in Armageddon, Versus the Nature, Pearl Harbor, and Saving Private Ryan, which was coming out later that year. She said those movies didn't push him. And we've all seen that Family Guy joke where Ben Affleck remembers that he has to be King Arthur in 15 minutes, and he just says, hello, 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 nailed it, and then takes a bong rip and goes to set. We all know that he doesn't want to be pushed. He's not looking for a challenge, and that's okay, Gwyneth. No. You don't need to change him. But, you know, she's still young, and so we all think that we can fix men in our lives, and then we realize we don't fucking need to. Mm-mm. Ben Affleck also said a lot of fucked up misogynistic shit about Gwyneth Paltrow at the time. Although we all hate Goop, she definitely experienced a particular brand of disgusting sexism and harassment during this period of her life between Weinstein and Ben Affleck, and, you know, a little bit of sympathy. Exhibit A. Around the time of this New York Times article, Ben Affleck was getting dogged out in the press for saying that Gwyneth Paltrow is, quote, actually funny and down to earth, a fat girl in a beautiful girl's body.
Oh, God, like Shallow Hal, but the other way.
He predicted Shallow Hal.
Jesus.
He wished it into life. It's like Tony Robbins heard it in a whisper of a wind and was just like, what? Shallow Hal? Starring Jack Black. And then this exhibit B, there was a longstanding rumor that during Shakespeare in Love, while Ben Affleck was getting strapped into like a complicated pair of shoes, Gwyneth Paltrow was getting fitted for a skirt next to him, he shoves his entire hand up her skirt and basically tells everybody that's within earshot that she's got a really nice ass. Because he's a fucking super cool bro.
You know, he did something. Remember Hillary Burton?
Thank you.
Okay.
No, go ahead. But yeah, that was my next point.
Yeah, like, so MTV Spring Break, back when Hillary Burton, before she was on One Tree Hill and she was just a VJ on MTV, she was interviewing Ben Affleck, and of course, drunk frat boy that he is, started making out with her and, like, just up and made out with her. They had just met, like, seconds ago.
I think he grabbed her boob?
I think he did, too. And, like, and so they brought it up during all the Me Too stuff. Like, Affleck was one of those people who kind of defended Weinstein at the beginning, or just wasn't doing enough, really, to show up and be like, yeah, that's bullshit. And I remember someone tweeted that video and was like, well, he clearly doesn't care about women. And she responded to it and was like, yeah, I had just met him seconds prior. I did not know that was coming.
And he was doing promo for the dreaded Batman v Superman Law & Order SVU very special episode at the time. And so some reporters rightly called him out, and he essentially was like, oh, whoops. Like, I didn't even realize I grabbed her boob. I'm like, first of all, that's a shit apology. And second of all, that's not an excuse. Just because you don't recall grabbing someone's tit doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Sorry I made you feel uncomfortable.
But it's just because you don't, I mean, that's also clearly like someone who has substance abuse problems. That's sort of the line. If they haven't fully healed or gotten better, we'll kind of be like, oh, well, I just like don't remember. It's like, that's not really an excuse. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. So this New York Times article, though, is also from, I think it was 2000, is incredibly interesting because it gets into his family history, particularly his dad's history with alcoholism and how it runs in the family. Mm-hmm. And the author of the piece all but alludes to him having a, you know, obviously a problem. Even back then, it was sort of like an open secret. So I found that to be very interesting. They eventually break up in October of 2000. But the most interesting part of this couple is during this era, Gwyneth Paltrow and Winona Ryder were best friends. Oh, I know it's difficult to picture. I could not picture it until I looked it up. But they were. They were practically inseparable because they had come up around the same time. Gwyneth Paltrow even introduced Winona Ryder to Matt Damon, and they spent all of their time out doing double dates and all sorts of, like, cutesy Hollywood shit like that. They had some massive falling out around the time that Gwyneth Paltrow and Ben Affleck were splitting up, but people maybe thought that they were, like, splitting up their friends, or maybe it was awkward, but turns out Winona actually fucking hates Gwyneth Paltrow forever, because Gwyneth Paltrow stole the lead role in Shakespeare in Love from her, allegedly. So, allegedly, Gwyneth Paltrow saw the script in Winona Ryder's house, asked if she could read it, auditioned for the role behind her back, got it, and then eventually went on to win an Oscar.
And that's crazy, because the next year was Girl Interrupted, which was supposed to be Winona's Oscar year, and then Angelina Jolie
stole her thunder. This also comes back up in 2009 when Gwyneth Paltrow launches Goop, A Simpler Time. Anyway, the very first article of this cursed site is a drag on Winona Ryder.
No.
Goop writes, quote, "Back in the day, I had a quote-unquote frenemy who, as it turned out, was pretty hell-bent on taking me down." She went on to write, quote, "I restrained myself from fighting back. I tried to take the high road, but one day I heard that something unfortunate and humiliating happened to this person, and my reaction was deep relief and happiness." What a cunt.
That's so awful.
Shove a jade egg up it. Mm-mm. Winona's doing just fine.
Hashtag free Winona.
And that's the story of Gwyneth Paltrow and Ben Affleck, who did not live happily ever after.
Actually, I don't think all but one of our couples, I believe, tonight
stayed together
or did not stay together. So my couple, first one, is Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. The photo that launched 1,000 blog posts last week or 2 weeks ago from the SAG Awards is all because of this relationship, which was the height of, like, celeb gossip for probably a solid 4 to 5 years. So before they get together, some background. Jennifer Aniston had dated Tate Donovan from 1995 to 1998 because he played her client slash love interest Joshua on Friends. And then before dating him, she had also dated Adam Duritz from Counting Crows, who would later date her best friend slash co-star Courtney Cox.
Just plowing puss, Adam Duritz.
With those white boy dreads. Like, oh, seriously?
Oh, my God.
Seriously?
Bay Area's own. Catch him on the Warriors' courtside seats.
Hanging around.
Just cursing the court.
That's right.
Haunting it like a wraith.
Mr. Jones and him.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
I know. You had to do it. I don't blame you.
I had to do it. Meanwhile, Brad had dated several co-stars in the early 90s, from Robin Givens, who was actually Mike Tyson's ex-wife.
Ooh.
Yeah. Jill Sholin, and Juliette Lewis, which I had forgotten about.
What a wild pair.
Right? Later, his first really high-profile relationship would come from, of course, dating his co-star from the movie Seven, Gwyneth Paltrow. They dated from 1994 to 1997 and got engaged during that time.
And they also became the same person because they got the same haircut and wore a lot of the same clothes.
They both had the same, like, chunky highlights because it was the 90s. Like, it was incredible. So Jen and Brad meet first in 1994 because their managers were friends, and then they later are set up by said managers in 1998 on their first date. And later, she would say in an interview in Rolling Stone that she really liked him, quote, "he was this sweet guy from Missouri, you know, a normal guy." Like, and so that was really, I think that was a huge basis of why people liked them was, sure, they were super high profile actors, but they were kind of really low key. Like, they, you would see them on in these paparazzi photos and, like, jeans and t-shirts just getting pizza in LA or whatever.
Super fucking baked.
Super fucking baked. After months of speculation about their potential relationship, they made their first appearance on the red carpet at the 1999 Emmy Awards when Friends was nominated. A few months later, they attended a Sting concert where they went up on stage and she had an engagement ring.
Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that.
So it all happened very quickly at that point. And then the following year, in 2000, they got married in a private ceremony in Malibu. They had 200 guests, 50,000 flowers, 4 bands, a gospel choir, and fireworks. And they wrote their own vows, and I was just, like, I was reading what they kind of said. It was just very cute. They were, again, like, another couple that, even though they are really hot people, you could have seen yourself be friends with them. So, this goes, you know, it's bliss for a couple of years, and then the beginning of the end kind of starts in 2003, when Brad Pitt meets his Mr. and Mrs. Smith co-star Angelina Jolie when they start filming. And that's when the rumors start to circulate about their on-set chemistry. They maintain that nothing happened between them before Brad Pitt split with Jennifer Aniston, but, I mean, the photos tell a different story.
It's fucking messy.
Very messy. They would later announce their split on January 7th, 2005, a week after having vacationed with Courtney Cox, then Arquette, and her then-husband, David Arquette.
So who we are not talking about.
We are not talking about. Over the years, I think this relationship, a lot has been made out of it with Brad and Angelina because they were first seen as this controversial couple. She was seen as a homewrecker. People believe.
Okay, but that spread in W Magazine did not help matters whatsoever.
It certainly did not. And I mean, again, I think our culture has evolved quite a bit that this she would have not gotten that crazy amount of wrath that she got in the press. But
I feel
right.
Like it would have been more evenly divided for sure.
It would have been
sure.
more evenly divided. Like, Pitt would have been as equally, like, judged.
Raked over the coals.
Exactly. Ultimately, though, in hindsight, Pitt and Aniston ended things fairly amicably, and she's even said in a Vanity Fair interview that, quote, "We exited this relationship as beautifully as we entered it." And the quickness of them getting together, though, was hurtful to her, and she's implied that in interviews over the past few years or after the relationship, you know, stating that it was really difficult to see everything right in front of her with these magazine spreads and pictures and all that. So what's interesting is for how popular they were not together for very long.
They have had more relationships play out in OK Magazine.
Yes.
And they've been a longer couple, according to tabloids, than they were together.
Exactly.
I don't understand this phenomenon.
I don't either.
But the way they broke up has cast them as people that have followed them for the rest of their lives.
For sure, for sure. And
she's sad, heartbroken Jen, who can never
childless keep a man.
Childless
oh my God,
Spencer. Yeah. I mean, by the way, she's fucking rich. She looks incredible.
She's
her skin
50
is
years old.
Her skin
Stunning.
Is flawless.
So
she's
gorgeous.
Banged. She's banged that
Justin
hot,
Theroux.
Thank you. I was like, not Justin Trudeau, the other hot Justin. I mean, she's got to bang a lot of hot dudes.
Yes.
She's fucking fine.
She's doing fine.
And she's had to say as much. And I feel that's the only thing I feel bad about is like the fact that she has to constantly tell people at least once a year, like, I'm not a sad person.
Right.
Please stop saying that to my face, like saying it to her face in interviews. It's crazy.
It's insane. So really, I mean, I will go into the aftermath of all this, which is, of course, that after Brad and Angelina got together, they would go on to have 6 children, both adopted and biological.
That's too many kids.
Jolie had adopted her first son, Maddox, when she was still with Billy Bob Thornton in 2002. But she had adopted him on her own and then later adopted Zahara. Pitt would go on to adopt both those children, and then she would adopt another son, Pax, and have 3 children together, Shiloh, Knox, and Vivian. They got married in 2014 and would go on to separate 2 years later. Meanwhile, Aniston's next film project after their split would be ironically called The Breakup. She would go on to briefly date her co-star, Vince Vaughn,
Yikes.
Who also happened to be in Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which I had forgotten about.
Oh.
Yep. Then she would later start dating Justin Theroux, who she met on the set of Wanderlust in 2011, and then later get married to him in 2015, and they separated 2 years later. Of course, as we've talked about before, the reunion a couple weeks ago, there was major press coverage recently because they were both seen at the SAG Awards. They've both been heavily nominated this award cycle, her for her role in The Network, or sorry, The
Network. The Morning Show Wishes. The Morning Show Wishes.
Oh, God. And so for Aniston for The Morning Show, and then for Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Truly the highlight of the whole movie.
For sure. They had a brief friendly encounter at the SAG Awards.
That everybody read way too much into.
Which was taken, a photo was taken of. And
well,
later,
the photo of him watching her give a speech.
That's what I'm going into. Is later, the video was caught of him watching her accept her Best Actress SAG Award for The Morning Show. And he admiringly looked on and said, wow. And like, everyone was like, oh, it's they're both separated from their spouses. This might happen. A Brad and Jen reunion. And honestly,
everybody is higher than me. Like, that makes absolutely no sense.
And honestly, just to see them admire one another, I think that is, as someone who has seen people who have gotten married or who had been together for a long time and who separate, the best thing that you can hope for, really, is just that if both people are good people, that it's civil and that later they can be happy for one another. And there's no need to necessarily get back together.
It's mutual respect.
And that's great. That is amazing to see two beautiful humans who, you know, divorced.
Who are, by all accounts, very nice, totally cool,
yep,
laid back people that don't take themselves too seriously.
Exactly.
But we don't need to couple everybody off.
No, we don't. And if they can be happy for one another and accept, you know, their victories, then that, I think that's
Isn't
wonderful.
That nice? Shouldn't that's we look wonderful. To that as an
we
example?
We should see that as an example of a good thing. And I think it's really just the press who's pissed off about that. They want this so badly.
Well, I wouldn't say they're pissed off. They're now turning it into, see, we've been telling you all this time, they're going to get back together. She's going to have twins via IVF. It's just like, she's even said, I actually love Jennifer Aniston for how much she talks about how she doesn't want kids.
I think
and that she
wonderful.
Doesn't feel like she's missing anything in her life. Because so few people do talk about it so openly.
She's a great godmother. Like, what else does she need to
do? What else does she need?
Oh, my God.
What could you possibly want from this woman?
And so the last point I have to make about this couple is, I you know, we've kind of gone into it already, is this the media's fascination. It really is because, you know, when they got together, they wrote their own wedding vows where Brad Pitt said that he would vow to split the difference on the thermostat, and she pledged to make her ex-husband's favorite, well, her now ex-husband's favorite banana shake in
bleak.
Her vows. Very
bleak.
But ultimately, I, you know, like I said, I think it's great that they are civil with one another, can appreciate when they have good things happen to each other. And if they can remain, you know, friends or at least civil, well, that's great. Go away, media. The end.
Yeah. They have even said that they're friendly in text. I just follow Jennifer Aniston on Instagram and leave that poor woman alone. My next couple is quite short because, well, there isn't a ton of info. I guess they weren't as big of a deal as I thought, or at least not in any sort of factual way that I could find on the internet. I am going to talk about Cameron Diaz and Jared Leto. Because I do not care for Jared Leto at fucking all.
Ew.
I am centering this whole relationship on the only part of this relationship that I do care about. Cameron motherfucking Diaz. If you're keeping score at home, in the Cameron Diaz has pulled some dude's timeline. We are post-Matt Dillon, pre-Justin Timberlake.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Because Cameron Diaz was a pretty private person even back in 1999, it's hard to tell when or how they met, but they officially got together in August of 1999. They got engaged in 2002 and then split in March of 2003. According to some sources, it's because Cameron Diaz's career was about to take off and Jared Leto was in that 30 seconds to... He was in 30 Seconds to Mars during that time.
It was right after Requiem for a Dream, probably, too, right?
Yes, because that's 1998.
Yeah.
So around this time, though, Cameron Diaz was in a bunch of high-profile movies like Any Given Sunday, Charlie's Angels, The Only Good One.
Gangs of New York.
Sweetest Thing. So she had really kind of, like, fleshed out her career. I mean, her performance in Gangs of New York is not good. But it was a high-profile movie that was nominated a bunch of times, and Daniel Day-Lewis gives a great performance.
Quick sidebar on The Sweetest Thing, if I may. There is a Marina Girl parody account on Twitter that is just Marina Girl tweets, and the image for the profile is Cameron Diaz in The Sweetest Thing, which is just perfect.
Since it's shot in San Francisco.
Yes.
And my dance teacher in high school, well... Actually, the dance teacher of the competitive group that I was a part of in high school, he is in the dance scene that they have in the Chinese restaurant when they bully Selma Blair into talking about how she has jizz all over her dress. So that's a cool thing, and I only found out about this movie because of said dance teacher, who I guess was not fully aware of what his scene was all about. He just showed up for the dance and the good time. But that's kind of all I have to say. I mean, I think people were surprised when she got together with Benji Madden, and this is evidence that she has dated a guy in a band before, albeit probably the worst dude to date from a band.
Oh, yeah.
And Benji Madden, although his dating career is quite illustrious himself, and we aren't going into the Madden brothers on this iteration of Iconic Coupling, because those two, we could have a whole...
We could have a pop-punk dating episode.
Dear God.
A solid hour.
I do not understand the appeal, but it happened. So, just to say that she was dating musicians at some point, and Jared Leto happened to be one of them, and then went on to date Justin Timberlake. So, there was clearly a pattern happening.
Yeah. The Matt, so, Good Charlotte is from nearby where I grew up, so they used to play my high school, like, right before they got big, they would play, like, the annual dance-a-thon in my high school.
And dance-a-thon?
Yeah, for cystic fibrosis.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, yeah, shout out Super Dance. That's really what it's called. So, my cup next couple. This one is a lot of material, my friends, mainly because Scientology is really what started it and later doomed it. We are talking about, of course, Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes, a.k.a. Tomcat.
I really, who came
every couple.
Who came up with Tomcat? Because they should be arrested.
They should be arrested. They should be sent to the Scientology camp. Like, I'll put it out there.
If I can just do a quick detour, I would like to just point out that in the vows that my husband and I wrote, we both vowed to never let the other one become a Scientologist. And this is the entire opposite of what our vows are.
Yes, yes.
Also, yeah, never give me a gross nickname like that. I will be very upset.
I will make sure to never do that to you. That's my friendship vow to you.
It's beautiful. You've said it in front of all of these faceless people that are listening right now.
It's been recorded.
And they will hold you accountable.
So before these two get together, Katie Holmes was known for having dated her Dawson's Creek co-star Joshua Jackson in the late 90s and then would go on to date Chris Klein from
yes.
American Pie from 2000 to March 2005. And that month is important. We will get
quick
back
sidebar.
To that.
My mom, when she was doing real estate law, helped Chris Klein with something. And so that was around the time that he was dating Katie Holmes.
Oh.
And he was a very nice Southern boy, according to my, a very nice Midwestern boy, excuse me, according to my mother. And that's all that I found out. Katie never showed up at any point in time. But as a Dawson Creek fan, I made my mom tell me if she even got a whiff of her coming through to let me know so I could just, you know, casually stop by my mom's office for no big deal. Yeah. Hey, what's up? Oh, I didn't see you there.
Hi. So she was with Chris Klein from 2000 to March 2005, and that month is important. We'll get back to that in a second. They got engaged in 2003, so they were engaged for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Tom Cruise, where to start? He had been married twice.
But I don't know, just jump right in.
So before he even gets married, he's dating a couple of older women. So he dated Cher, dated his co-star from Risky Business, Rebecca De Mornay, and then dated Patti Scalfia, who I always mispronounce her name, even though I'm a huge Springsteen fan. She's of course in the E Street Band and would go on to marry Bruce Springsteen.
I wonder how all of them got together.
I don't know.
We get Rebecca De Mornay, but
yeah.
I mean, good for Tom.
Yeah,
banging older ladies.
I appreciate that. That and like finding out that Jim Carrey dated Linda Ronstadt in the 80s. That's another one.
What?
Yes. Yes.
What?
So when he was in his 20s, he was dating Linda Ronstadt, who probably at that point was late 30s, maybe early 40s. I don't know, but I get it. I love it.
I can't imagine that she'd have patience for all his antics.
I don't know.
Just nonstop bit work.
And this is like pre In Living Color even. He was just like struggling stand-up comic at that point. So meanwhile, Tom Cruise, after dating a couple of more mature women, married his first wife, actress Mimi Rogers, from 1987 to 1990, and she's the one who introduced him to Scientology, and then she left the church.
Thanks a lot, Mimi.
And then in 1990, after he divorced Mimi Rogers, he later dated and married his Days of Thunder co-star, Nicole Kidman. They were together from 1990 to 2001.
Whoa.
Yes. Yeah, you forget, but they were together for so long. Like, Eyes Wide Shut came out in 2001, and
that was their breakup movie.
Yeah, that was their breakup movie, and Kubrick actually died while he was making
it. I know.
It's so sad.
That movie is cursed. But Nicole Kidman was so young.
I know.
It is kind of crazy to think about.
So during that marriage, they adopted two kids, Connor and Isabella, who allegedly don't have much of a relationship with Kidman anymore because she is not a part of the Church of Scientology.
She's an SP, y'all.
She's an SP. And the
we really can't get into much more because we do not want to
get stalked. Their relationship did, in fact, end partially because of that. She did not want to continue on with Scientology.
Right.
And her father is actually a psychiatrist. And that is, like, one of the ultimate SPs. They do not believe in psychology or psychiatry. So,
And didn't Nicole Kidman grow up Catholic, too?
I think so. Yeah. I'm pretty sure you're right on that one. But so did Tom Cruise, which is interesting. He almost became a priest.
Yeah,
there are a couple of actors out there who, like, dabbled in, you know, maybe going
priesthood.
Priesthood or going to the seminary.
Talk about a young pope.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Am I right?
See?
Hot priest?
Even I get one in, too.
So after that, he dated Penelope Cruz for a couple years because of Vanilla Sky.
Another crazy coupling. Like, I know. What do you think they talked about?
I don't even know. And knowing Penelope Cruz, I feel like she did not put up with any of the Scientology bullshit. But I'm surprised they stuck for that long together.
Right.
Despite that.
Mostly her. I thought she would have walked away way before.
Yeah. No, seriously. So if you have read Going Clear or have seen the documentary or read the Vanity Fair article about this...
Emily's done all three.
I've done all three. It is around this time that the Church of Scientology launches this campaign internally to find Tom Cruise a new lady. Right. So they auditioned a ton of people for this. And the person they ended up picking was Nazanin Boniadi, and I'm so sorry if I butchered that, who has detailed in an interview that this experience was so emotionally abusive... and that she even left the Church of Scientology after this experience. In retaliation, the church, after this article was published in Vanity Fair, the church threatened to sue. But later, former Scientologist Tom Haggis, the screenwriter.
Oh, yeah. Paul Haggis.
Why did I say Tom Haggis?
Because you're talking about Tom Cruise.
Paul Haggis, the screenwriter who has left the church as well, confirmed that this story was in fact true. So that relationship did not work out, and...
Can I just hit a quick pause and ask you a question? Did you see either the trailer or any episode of... There was an scripted show that was basically this story, where a dude, an actor, who is in, like, a religious-y kind of cult, they launch an internal thing where they try to find him a girlfriend. They find him a girlfriend. Briefly. She doesn't... I forget what it's called.
I know what you're talking about. I don't remember the name.
It was very interesting. And I remember, like, Church of Scientology tried to get out in front of it. They're like, that's not us. Like, it's not about us. And if he, like, tries to say it is us, we'll fucking sue them.
And it's so funny. Anytime anything gets publicized about
them. Yeah, they're
going
to sue you.
So I was a consultant at Warner Brothers when Going Clear came out, or right around that time on HBO. And I remember talking to a client over there on my project and asking her, like, because I knew Warner Brothers owned HBO, was it a big deal, like, when that documentary came out? Because so many employees of Warner Brothers and actors and what have you are, you know, Scientologists. And she told me that the company had to send a company-wide memo to all employees that stated that though HBO is owned by Warner Brothers, that this was in no way representative of the feelings and opinions of Warner Brothers as a whole. To, like, clarify and as a CYA move.
Yikes.
Yep.
Don't join Scientology is the takeaway.
So, meanwhile, while this whole Scientology let's find Tom a girlfriend thing is going on, there is a 2004 interview with Seventeen magazine where Katie Holmes tells a reporter about her crush on Tom Cruise and how growing up she had a poster of him and thought she was going to marry him. And actually, there was an interview I read with the woman who played Grams on Dawson's Creek, Mary Beth Pale, who is actually a really famous theater Broadway actress. And she talked about how one time, you know, before they got together, she was sitting in a makeup chair during one episode and Katie Holmes was nearby and they brought up Tom Cruise because they were talking about Jerry Maguire. And immediately she had said something slightly negative about Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes was like, you can't say that. And then went into all the details about knowing everything there was to know about Tom Cruise. So this kind of set things up a little bit. It's not really clear if she was brought on by Scientology or whatnot, but that's pretty soon. In March 2005, she and Chris Klein end things, and in April 2005, she and Tom Cruise are seen publicly for the first time. So a month later, this timeline reminded me a lot of Ariana Grande and
Pete Holmes. Could you imagine awkward Pete Holmes dating Ariana Grande? What? Balamos Pete Holmes? I can't even.
Ladies and gentlemen, it has been a week.
Holmes and I'm starting that rumor.
Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson's relationship is very similar timelines in terms of people ending relationships and then starting up relationships. So then after April 2005, where they're seen together for the first time, May of 2005 is when Tom Cruise goes on Oprah to declare his love for Katie Holmes and infamously leaps on top of the sofa he was just sitting on and says, quote, I'm in love. I'm in love, and it's one of those things where you want to be cool, like, yeah, I like her, and that's not how I feel. I wanted to meet this person, and I met her, and she's extraordinary.
It just makes me think about that gif where it's Tom Cruise jumping on the couch, but it's a bunch of bees.
Forever seared in our memories.
I mean, he's just like, I'm in love, and I don't care who knows it.
it's literally like a scene in Elf where like Buddy the Elf is like, I'm in love. And it was just like that. But in real life, not actor.
No, I remember everybody being haunted.
Yes. For many years. To this day, for me.
To this day, quite frankly, yeah.
A month later in June.
oh my God.
I had to do a little month by month action because the timeline for this relationship, you guys, is bonkers.
We need like a 20, like the show 24. We need like the little countdown clock.
Like TikTok, like new thing boop, just happened. Yeah. Beep, engagement. Boop. Pregnancy.
I mean, they really sped this shit up on a timeline, like, honey. They were like, we got places to be. We got bitches to impregnate. We gotta get married. Let's have Jada Pinkett Smith coming to our wedding. Like, holy, we've got shit. It all.
A month later, June of 2005, Katie Holmes says that she is going to convert to Scientology. And this is around the time she's doing press for Batman Begins, because she's in that first Christopher Nolan movie. Yeah, people forget. And what's interesting is this is really kind of the peak of her career at that point. Mm-hmm. And we'll go into that more later. So in 2005, they announced their, June of 2005, that same month, they announced their engagement. So let's recap, shall we? March of 2005, she announces her breakup with Chris Klein. April of 2005, she steps out publicly with Tom Cruise. May of 2005, Oprah couch.
May of 2005, we're in love.
We're in love, Oprah couch. June of 2005, engagement and potential conversion to Scientology.
Well, I feel like it's just like if you got married to, or if you were going to marry somebody who practices the Jewish faith, yes, you would have to convert to Judaism.
Right.
And it's a part, like, you can't get married without it. And right. I mean, I'm not trying to equate Scientology, which is absolute nonsense, with Judaism, which is a real religion. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that the announcement together was not totally surprising.
No. In October of that year, they announced
And she already seemed kind of brainwashed. All yes. right, moving on.
In October of that year, they announced that they are pregnant, and Katie Holmes would go on to give birth to Suri Cruz.
Silently,
because you're not allowed to make noise, or you are supposed to resist making noise while giving birth in Scientology tradition.
That was a huge to-do in the tabloids, too.
Oh, my God. Of course. And he bought all the medical... So this is amazing. During the pregnancy, he bought a sonogram for the house. He bought all this medical equipment and said that they would donate it once they were done and had given birth. But all these doctors were like, yeah, dude, just because you have the equipment and the means for it doesn't mean you are a licensed operator of said medical devices for your pregnant wife.
Like, I totally forgot about that. He...
Unhinged, you guys.
A little bit. I mean, unhinged. I'm really glad that he's course corrected so I can enjoy the Mission Impossible franchise.
Of course.
But he was very unwell.
There was a 5-year period, which we'll talk about even more.
It gets dark indeed.
So a few months later, after she gives birth in April, in October of 2006, they are the cover of Vanity Fair, and that's like the first time we see Suri Cruz and some family photos. And then they would get married in Italy the following month. And of course...
Oh my God, that wedding photo in front of that wall of flowers.
Yes.
Where she's like trying to make it seem like he's not as short as he is.
I know.
Oh my God. I can see it. I don't even need to look it up. I see it in my brain.
You guys, his best man was fucking David Miscavige.
Where is Shelley? Where is Shelley? Justice for Shelley.
Oh my God. And I mean, again, you guys, I'm sure many of you, because we know and love you all, have seen, heard, read all the Scientology things, Leah Remini, Going Clear, what have you. Anyway, we won't go into too much of a deep dive.
But Leah Remini was at their wedding.
She was at the wedding. That's, I think, where she asked or tried to ask about Shelley.
Right, this was the beginning of her being excommunicated from the church.
Yes, I just remembered that, too. Like, she's the first person to be like, where's Shelley? And everyone's like, you can't ask about Shelley. And it's like, oh, my God. So looking back.
Right, because when she's like, I was warned at the wedding.
Yes.
Then I was warned again.
Yes.
And then they like quarantined her and like asked her a bunch of questions. Yeah.
Yes.
Also, I believe J-Lo and Marc Anthony, another iconic couple, RIP to their relationship, not to them, obviously. They were also there.
Yeah.
They were also bizarrely.
Jada Pinkett, George Clooney with whoever his girlfriend was at the time. it was
not Amal Clooney.
What a wild time.
They really had an interesting set of friends. Like, you would never think the way that Tom Cruise was behaving that these cool people would show up to his wedding.
No, it was such
I guess everybody just wants an excuse to go to Italy.
Yeah, it was a strange time. During this all, Cruise was, of course, already known for being a devout Scientologist, And it was, you know, he had talked about it briefly in interviews, but that's really around the time where it became even more publicly apparent how devout he was in his Scientology and just how high up he was in the organization. So around 2008, there is that indoctrination video that goes viral that was never supposed to be shared outside the church. And it's, I think Gawker leaks it, and, or there were a couple of reporters who leaked it. And it was the one where he's like laughing kind of maniacally the whole time about, like, you know, my one time this person told me that one day we'll live in a world where there are no SPs, and SPs are the suppressed people or
suppressive people.
And these include people who've talked shit about the church, trying to get someone to leave the church, who supports psychiatry and psychology, or communicate with another suppressive person. And so it was just laughing about that, that one day there would be no more suppressive people in the world. And just, it was so disturbing to watch. And this is when Cruz's career takes a bit of a nosedive. Over the next few years.
Big time.
Big time. Like, I remember seeing that Mission Impossible movie that came out around that
Mission time, Impossible 3, which was bad.
Which was bad. And people clapped when Cruz got hurt or when it looked like he had died. I forget what it exactly was.
It starts off where it looks like he's, like, faked his death.
Yes.
And then it's seen that he isn't dead, and I don't really remember.
It's so long
since
I've seen that, like 15 years.
I did see it in theaters. I actually fell down the theater steps because we came in as the trailers were going, but it was, like, between trailers.
Oh, yeah.
And the lights weren't really bright enough, and I missed a step. And as my friend reached out to try and grab me because I was slipping, he accidentally pushed me and I fell. And it was 100% a clueless Brittany Murphy moment where everybody's like, oh my God, that looked really bad. Are you okay? I'm like, oh my God, stop talking to me, please.
That, like, literally happened to me last night at a theater.
Yeah, so that really colored my opinion of Mission Impossible 3, which I don't think is very good. But the franchise has really turned it around. It's the last three movies have been so good.
So, yeah, that is true. He's turned everything around. He's reverse course.
Sure,
so,
but in this time, like you said, Mission Impossible 3, not well
not
received.
Not great. And I think apart from Tropic Thunder, that was, yeah. Like,
I feel really, like that was the beginning of redeeming himself.
That's about the time. So over the next few years, they're not as much in the limelight. And while they still gush about each other in interviews, like Katie Holmes starts saying things like, she went from saying they would have a lot of kids together to she wants to have more kids, but not in the near future, and just wants to focus on Suri. And she kind of becomes almost a full-time mom. And partially, I think it was out of choice, but the other thing was that really after Batman Begins, I can't think of many movies she was in during that time. Like, maybe Mad Money is the only one I can think of with Queen Latifah and Diane Keaton.
Sure, but that was much later.
I think you're right. That might have been close to divorce at that point.
When did they get divorced?
2012.
Right, so I think that Mad Money must have been 2010.
Something like that.
Because we did some promo at it my first job out of college, and I remember that. Because I remember thinking, like, oh, good, she's back, and then seeing the trailer and being like, oh, no, not this one.
So she really didn't do much during that time. And so part of it is, you know, I think she wanted to be more, do the mom thing more. But also it's
plot her escape from Scientology.
It's come out in later years that there was, you know, quite a few strict regulations in that marriage. So where Trouble in Paradise begins. Cruz appears at the Rock of Ages movie premiere in June of 2012 without Katie Holmes, and later that month, they announced their split. This was well covered by a Tumblr that I adored back in the day that was called Suri's Burn Book, and it was this woman who, kind of like what Gary Jannetty does with Prince George, did this with Suri Cruz and would just, like, take down pictures, like, paparazzi photos of celebrities with their children and the outfits that they were wearing, and like she had celebrities like Suri Cruz came out to be like this catty human who loved certain ones, like she loved the Beckham kids but like would hate shit all over the Jolie Pitt kids and what they were wearing and the Affleck Garner children and what they were wearing, and she's like, how dare Violet wear glasses, like
it really is Gary Jannetty.
It really was, like, before that all happened, Suri's Burn Book was where it was at. That divorce comes out, and it was alleged that the split was due to her opposition of the Church of Scientology and raising Suri as a Scientologist. And their divorce settlement, which, you know, some things we know for sure, others we don't 100% know. But one thing is sure, that divorce settlement gave Katie Holmes sole custody of Suri while Cruz had visitation rights. And so, as you've seen in the last few years, anytime you see a photo of Suri Cruz, it's almost always with her mom.
Dude, no. There are tabloid covers where it's like, 782 days since Suri's seen daddy. It is insane.
Unhinged.
And also just so fucking cruel. Like, saying she actually was more of like a raised as like a normal child and she were to go to the supermarket and see that, I mean, that's just devastating. It's zero regard for how another person may or may not be feeling about this, but also just so out of touch with reality that it's practically laughable.
Yep. So where they are today, Katie Holmes dated Jamie Foxx up until this past year, and actually one of the conditions allegedly in her divorce settlement was that she couldn't have a high-profile relationship that was made public for the first 5 years after their divorce, which is why she really laid low with Jamie Foxx. I don't know if that's 100% true. I could see it being something like that, some sort of clause in that settlement, but they split, unfortunately.
Recently.
Very recently, like last couple of months. And that was right after they had been public kind of for the first time. Cruz hasn't been in any high-profile relationships since this divorce and has really laid low on the Scientology declarations. As I said earlier, she has sole custody of Suri, and Cruz does not see her that frequently. But meanwhile, Tom Cruise's kids from his marriage to Nicole Kidman have actually taken on really prominent roles in the church. And in a leaked newsletter from last year, Isabella Cruz talked about becoming an auditor. So they're both pretty high up. And I believe his son, Connor, is dating another prominent young Scientologist. Ultimately, this marriage killed a big part of Katie Holmes' career. She was really kind of peak at that Batman Begins when, the beginning of the Christopher Nolan trilogy. But after that, we really didn't see her in much. She did that Kennedy's miniseries a couple of years ago.
Oh, I heard that was sequel. I heard she was good.
She was good. I saw it. It was like Greg Kinnear plays JFK. I don't remember anyone else really. I think, what's his name? The guy who's in every single miniseries on HBO, older gentleman. Tom, I'll think about it later. He played Joe Kennedy. But it was pretty good, and she did a good job as Jackie Kennedy. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm glad to see that she seems happy and she's been doing theater and lives in New York with her daughter. But ultimately, this was a pretty dark marriage and just kind of unfortunate because, Katie Holmes really didn't have much of a career. And she seems to be coming back now, but hasn't really ever gotten the roles that she would have gotten had her career, continued to be on the rise after Batman Begins.
Katie Holmes hasn't really experienced sort of like a Nicole Kidman like renaissance yet.
No.
Maybe she will. I've heard speculation that she does have some stuff pending that she might be a part of, and hopefully something is high profile enough to kind of like hit so it'll stick.
I'd like to see her on TV again. Like, I think she's a good, like, there's so much good TV out there.
I think she needs to be in like an Americans, like Carrie Russell kind of role.
That's what I'm thinking too. And I think,
or like a Homeland. I don't know. She does like pensive crying face quite well. So I don't know. I think she could do something in the future, but we'll see. Maybe she doesn't really want to act that much anymore. It's hard to tell because she doesn't really talk about it, and that's her right, because we don't need to know everything. She's not in a high-profile relationship anymore.
Yep. So that's that.
Well, it gives me absolute pleasure and delight to talk about our generation's Rita Wilson and Tom Hanks, Freddie Prinze Jr., and Sarah Michelle Gellar. This is definitely the first celeb couple I actively shipped. As a fan of Freddie Prinze Jr.'s handsome face and a big enough fan of Buffy that I could regularly write fan fiction, I was very into them getting together. They're still together, which is great. They recently celebrated 20 years, 17 married, and my girl SMG posted this to IG. I should have not written it that way because now I have to stick with what I just said out loud.
It was cute.
She posted something to Instagram this week. I think you reposted it onto our stories as well.
I did, because they are, for us, they're kind of like our royal couple.
Yeah, I definitely, and this is dumb, but kind of admire their relationship. I think it's really heartwarming to see them still together, especially as, a remnant of some childhood nostalgia is tied up in that as well.
And with children who have relatively normal names in comparison to...
Charlotte and Rocky.
In a great, world of great apples names. And Moseses.
Be a Charlotte and a Rocky. I also like that Sarah Michelle Gellar respects her children's privacy enough to not show their pictures all the time.
She also was the face of a pro-vaccination PSA a few years ago, and I was just like, thank you for actually standing for something that is so not recognized in your community. Like, I to see a face like her just be like, yeah, it's that time of year. You should be vaccinating your children.
I love Sarah Michelle Gellar. I think she's great. And she's one of my, you know, top 10 white women. Right up there with Celine Dion and Elizabeth Warren.
Yep.
Okay. So she posted a photo of them actually just this past week. It was a then and now photo of her with Freddie Prinze Jr. And the caption read, 20 years ago this week, my friend Freddie Prinze Jr. and I were supposed to have dinner with a mutual friend from out of town. The friend missed her flight, but we still decided to meet and catch up. Now, 20 years together, 17 plus married and two kids, and we still go to that restaurant for dinner. Thank you to @Sloaney77 for not showing up for dinner, which I thought was adorable and warmed my heart as if they were part of my extended family or something equally as creepy. Even though they met in 1997 on the set of I Know What You Did Last Summer, they didn't start dating until 2000 when what was supposed to be a casual friend date turned into a romantic date. They credit being friends for a few years before getting together as the key or one of the keys to their successful relationship. They got engaged in April of 2001, and per, actually, ironically, a Pop Bitch newsletter that I got just this week, they had a really fun tidbit that Freddie Prinze Jr. celebrated his engagement to Sarah Michelle Gellar by buying them his and hers matching bowling balls.
That is so cute / so 2019-99.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't you just see them doing some promotion at, like, Pins or
yes.
whatever?
Yes. And you know she had, like, I had a purse from Puma around that time.
Yes, that was bowling bag shape, baby. Yep. That's that fashion time.
Spent so much babysitting money on it.
But I felt like this is sort of like the wholesome content that people loved about kind of like Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt. Not saying that they're on the same wavelength, but they're like, they are the Emmy versions of the Oscar couple, you know? And that's no tea, no shade. I think that they're great together. And
the nice people. Like, they're genuinely nice people.
Yes, they are the neighbors who will, if they see your garbage can out, like, pull it up to the curb, you know, and get it out of the way.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. They got married in Mexico in September of 2002, but not without some natural disasters along the way, which I remember weirdly, extremely clearly, because they had a lot of interviews about their wedding afterwards, because what happened was such a bizarre anomaly. First, they had Hurricane Hernan come through, forcing their initially outdoor wedding indoors, and then at the end of the night, when everyone was leaving to go back to the hotel, a 4.6 magnitude earthquake hit.
What?
Yes. Both of those things happened on their wedding day.
No.
I know, I don't know. Your wedding day is already stressful enough. I am surprised. I would have, like, completely... I lost my mind over, like, fucked up lift codes. Like, I can't even imagine.
No. Oh, my God.
I can't even imagine having a goddamn hurricane and an earthquake. I don't know. I probably just would have gotten wasted. I mean, whatever. Anyway. But other than that, their wedding was fairly small, 60 people. Sarah Michelle Gellar's mom watched it on the aisle, and Adam Shankman officiated their ceremony.
Oh, that's great.
Right? I had no idea. They've gone on to not only live happily ever after, but also play love interest in two Scooby-Doo movies and frequently voice characters together on Star Wars Rebel and a couple of other features. In 2007, for their fifth wedding anniversary, Sarah Michelle Gellar changed her last name to Prince. She surprised him by showing her a driver's license with her name changed to Sarah Prince.
Aw.
Isn't that cute?
That's cute.
They're cute. That's it.
They're great.
They're nice. They're normal. They don't have their tabloid coverage is very much like, look how cute they are.
Yeah, they were out at Disney World. Like, he's totally a DILF of Disneyland.
Oh,
and
my
I
God.
I love it.
He is now a cookbook author, and also he has, I believe, either a YouTube or a Twitch channel where he plays video games people can watch along. A couple of years ago, you might remember Sarah Michelle Gellar was doing some interview for either that show that she was on with R.I.P. Robin Williams.
Oh, the crazy ones.
Or another one where she was talking about how there was a point when Freddie Prinze Jr. got really addicted to World of Warcraft that she joined a support group called Widows of World of Warcraft where she met other women whose husbands were constantly playing the game. But it seems like, you know, they've talked it out, they've reached some sort of agreement, and now he just only does it when he's doing, like, a Twitch or YouTube live stream, which is just as crazy to me. Also, Sarah Michelle Gellar has, in addition to still acting, mostly on TV for the most part, I think.
Yeah.
And doing popping up in movies and stuff here and there. She also owns Foodstars, which is like an easy cake bake company.
It's like a microwavable mug cake type
Pretty
of
much.
Thing.
And it's supposed to be, you know, not like natural ingredients and no like added whatever. And it's fairly successful in its own right. They like open on NASDAQ. And what I think is interesting, a couple of years ago, I think for Star Wars Rebel, Freddie Prinze Jr. was on Kimmel or someone, and he was talking about how he looks around and a lot of his friends got married around the same time, and now a lot of them are divorced and they're still the only ones. And he's like, I don't really know what the key to success is other than communicating with your partner and always finding time to spend together, whether it's just running errands or walking your dogs. He's like, you just got to make the most out of the minutes that you have. And I thought that was so sweet. And they just seemed to genuinely like each other. She posted a picture not too long ago where she was wearing pajamas with his face on it. I just love them.
I think they're great.
I am so fucking biased.
No, I mean, I was telling you before we started recording, I love her friendship with Selma Blair, who has MS, and how good she's been to her, and just they're always posting photos together, and it's just sweet. It's really nice to see that
people can be normal.
People can be normal. People can be kind. And that people can have a successful relationship in Hollywood. That is just really nice to see.
Well, that's why I called them the Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson of our time.
They really are. They really are. For my last couple, I wish I could have had more info here. But it's of Kirsten Dunst and Jake Gyllenhaal, who I adored when they were together because their paparazzi photos were some of my favorite paparazzi
photos. We were just
revisiting
them before we sat down to record.
Let's just say our Instagram account in the next few weeks will have some great pictures from their time together. They were my favorite couple to do research on because I really liked them when they were together. Definitely like low-key LA Brooklyn vibes, you know, like they were the couple that would run errands while walking the dog and getting their pizza, like just cute stuff like that. Before they got together, Kirsten Dunst had sort of dated, because she was a teenager, Jake Hoffman, whose dad is Dustin Hoffman, because they were in Wag the Dog together.
Oh.
She also dated her Spider-Man co-star, Tobey Maguire. And then meanwhile, Jake Gyllenhaal had dated Jenny Lewis in 2001, and she was in fact his date to the 2001 Golden Globes when Donnie Darko was nominated.
Oh.
Yep. They got together in 2002 when they were introduced to one another by Jake's sister, Maggie Gyllenhaal. She and Kirsten Dunst had worked together on Mona Lisa Smile.
Oh my God, that fucking movie.
I used to love it, and now, like, rewatching it.
I wanted to love it so bad, and then I remember I rented it, and I didn't even finish it. I'm like, I am bored to tears.
It did not age as well as I'd hoped. And they started dating in 2002 and dated until 2004. During that time, they bought a house together in LA and adopted a German Shepherd mixed puppy who I believe's name was Lovey, if I recall correctly.
Is this, season two of You? I also remember when they bought that house and got the dog, I'm like, oh, they're getting married.
They're going to get married.
They're perfect together. Oh, she's perfect. He's perfect. Oh, my God.
If I recall correctly, they were a great, like, headwear couple. Like, she wore a lot of knit berets at the time. This is like peak Elizabethtown people, if you recall. And then I'm pretty sure Gyllenhaal was a big cap guy at the time too, or beanies.
They were just so cute together.
Very cute. They were seen out and about walking said dog, running errands, and of course the infamous salad eating photos. There is this great paparazzi photo that we're going to put on the Instagram account from this time where they caught the two of them in this perfect moment where Kirsten Dunst is making a weird face while putting salad in her mouth with her fork, and Gyllenhaal just looks at her absolutely disgusted. And I don't remember what year this was taken, if this was right before they broke up. But then there's another photo in this series where he's spoon-feeding her some soup.
Oh my God, this is exactly why housewives have a clause to not eat on camera.
God, where are they now? There was really not much else I could find on this couple. It's more really the aftermath that's interesting. So after they split, Kirsten Dunst dated a few famous people, including Johnny Burrell, who's the lead singer of Razorlight, and Garrett Hedlund from 2012 to 2016, who she met on the set of On the Road. She would later start dating Jesse Plemons in 2016, who she met while filming the season that they were both on together for the show Fargo.
Yes.
And they would go on to get engaged and have a kid in 2018.
Also, by the way, justice for her performance in Fargo. She deserved
fantastic.
A Golden Globe.
Yep.
She deserved a SAG Award.
So good.
She was fucking robbed that year.
So good.
I can't believe Lady Gaga beat her out. That is absolute bullshit.
Oh, it was Gaga, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes. That fucking award was bought and paid for.
Yep.
And not to say that as someone who likes Lady Gaga, but that fucking season of Horror Story was also god-awful.
Not good. So Jake Gyllenhaal, on the other hand, briefly dated Natalie Portman and then dated Reese Witherspoon from 2007 to 2009, which I totally forgot. He was her first post-Ryan divorce guy.
And I think she goes from him to her husband that she's married to now.
Yes, that is exactly true.
Jim something or another?
Yes.
That CCA agent?
Jim Toth.
Thank you.
Right after she had split from Ryan Felipe, they date for 2 years, and he was a very big part of their life. Like, he was a good, like, guy to the kids and all that stuff. Then he dated Taylor Swift from 2010 to 2011, and this is when they went on their maple latte dates together, and he went on to inspire some of the songs on her album Red, and then later dated model Alyssa Miller from 2011 to 13, and is currently dating a model, a French model by the name of Jeanne Cadieux, who is, as we checked, I think 15 years younger than him. She was born in 1996, so she's quite a bit younger. Let's just hope he doesn't go full Leo on us.
He fucking better not. I'm going to be so annoyed if he
does. I loved him in Sack Lunch Bunch, like the John Mulaney special. I'm like, if he can be in that, he has to be better than going full Leo.
Well, I will say, in the time that he's been banging models, his performance in Nightcrawler and Velvet Buzzsaw are some of my favorites of his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
He was so good. Nightcrawler is so good. Anyway, I could talk about that all day, but that's not what you guys want to hear about. What you want to hear about is Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams. They're going to close this out. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams, as you probably all know, met on the set of The Notebook in 2003 and notoriously fucking hated each other. There's a story that Nick Cassavetes, the director, likes to tell about how Ryan Gosling pulls him aside one day and asked for the script soup to read her lines off camera for him so that he didn't have to physically share a scene with her.
No.
Yes, which I think is fucking batshit crazy.
Mm-mm.
This is literally the person you have, like, there's no way around it. You can't be, like, transferred to a different department.
No, I think Gosling has calmed down since this.
I think so, too.
He seems like a good dad and, like, you know.
No, I mean, it's like, this is also, like, one of his first big roles, and I think he was very earnest and took things very seriously.
Right, for
and,
sure.
But this is still absolutely insane. And by the way, there is still more. I am not done with the story. So Cassavetes' solution was to let them yell it out in a room with a couple of producers playing ref. Apparently, and Cassavetes, as soon as they started screaming at each other, exits the room and was a smoker at the time. He's like, smoke break for me, and then just left. So he left. He let the producers deal with it. And then apparently that helped at least enough to carry on the shoot where they could physically share scenes with each other and convey some sort of modicum of chemistry, enough to build a wild fan base who were very, very invested in them on and off screen. According to a GQ interview with Ryan Gosling in 2007, he said the switch from love to hate happened a few years later when they ran into each other in New York.
Or hate to love.
Whoops. Yep, the other way. You know, just like Allie and Nick? What's his name? Noah. Sorry.
You're thinking of Duke, because that's like what he goes by when he's older. Like the James Garner character.
Oh, right, who tricks you into thinking, like, yeah, who are these couple? Anyway,
twist.
And then how could we forget the infamous couple coming out party at the 2005 MTV Movie Awards? They shocked everyone by reenacting their jump kiss in the rain, but like for really real this time. They broke up initially in 2007, but got back together briefly in 2008, only to break up again. Neither have ever directly stated what led to their breakups, but Ryan Gosling has alluded to it a few times, famously, or at least to me, in the same GQ interview from before. He says, quote, God bless The Notebook. It introduced me to one of the great loves of my life. But people do Rachel and me a disservice by assuming we were anything like the people in that movie. Rachel and I had a love story that is a hell of a lot more romantic than that. The only thing I remember is we both went down swinging and we called it a draw. When they broke up for good in 2008, though, they cited the standard busy schedules. They are now both married to other people and have two kids, respectively, not with each other.
You know, they're both really chill people, especially
they're
her.
They're non-problematic Canadians.
No. I think I've talked about this on the pod before, but she is someone who lives in Toronto. I think she still does to this day.
She does.
Very low-key. She lives in Kensington Market, which is a really cool neighborhood in Toronto.
With screenwriter Jamie Linden, who I didn't look up what he's written, but he gets work.
And she's one of those people who just, you know, runs her errands and is very chill and just lives a normal life. Like, but that's a very Canadian celebrity thing to do. Like, when you go to Toronto, I've seen several celebrities. And my cousin, of course, and aunt and uncle who live there, it's just, like, when Suits was happening, they saw people. They saw Meghan Markle all the time and, like, the rest of the cast. And it's just, like, a normal thing. Like, people don't bother you in Toronto. It's, like, it's kind of like L.A., but without, like, I feel like the tourists wouldn't bother you in Toronto. Like, it's just kind of a chill. Like, oh, you're filming this show here. We're not going to bother you. We're just going to let you buy your cheese and your wine at this grocery store.
Right. I think it's only sort of L.A. where it kind of happens the most frequently, I think. I think it happens in New York, but a lot of New Yorkers are so
don't give a shit.
If they see you, they're just sort of like, all right, great for you, bro. Just to keep it moving, which I find very refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if you are a native of LA and you are accosting any famous person, you really need to recheck your values, because
for sure
that makes no sense. Oh, but I did once see Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr. in a parking lot at the peak of my whatever love for them, and didn't say anything but just audibly gasped loud enough that they looked at me and like smiled and waved. Which is not the first time I've audibly gasped in front of a celebrity. They heard it and then laughed at me.
My big thing is that my eyes just widen. Like, I never, I don't gasp, but I go like Macaulay Culkin.
Like, minus the sound effect.
I saw when I was the Women's March a few years ago in 2017, John Waters lives at least part-time in San Francisco.
And I cannot believe I've never seen him once, not even on accident or purpose.
I saw him. He was wearing sunglasses, trying to be, you know, a little incognito.
Sure.
But he had the pencil-thin mustache, and, like, you know, he's an older gentleman, so, like, immediately saw him, and, like, my eyes went, and he nodded to me like a thank you for not saying anything out loud type of thing. But I exchanged a look. Like, I know who you are, but I will not say it.
I feel like that's almost more gratifying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel like we've shipped to our heart's content on this edition of Iconic Couplings, because I feel like even in going through the ones that we had, we have even more to cover, just like emo bands.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you enjoy listening to this podcast, please check out our Medium page, where we will have a little accompaniment to this Iconic Couplings episode. We are the Old Millennials Pod on Medium, if you would like to read anything about Y2K or award shows or this. And please follow us on there as well. And if you enjoyed the podcast, make sure you leave us a review if it's nice. And if you don't want to leave a review, at least give us 5 stars, especially if you enjoyed it. And
please,
the biggest gift of all is, tell someone else to listen to this podcast.
Tell a friend. We're also on Facebook at the Old Millennials Pod and on Instagram as the Old Millennials Pod.
And you can follow us individually on Twitter. I am at Marg She Wrote.
And I am at Emily A. Bajan.
And until next time, we bid you a bye.
Bye.
Hi, my name's Christian.
And I'm Julia.
And we're the hosts of the Teen Wolf ReWolf podcast.
A podcast about MTV's Teen Wolf.
Where every week we take an episode of Teen Wolf and discuss it through a literary lens.
Putting our fine arts degrees to good use.
So if you're not over all the television you watched in high school, join us on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And you can follow us for updates on Twitter and Instagram at Teen Wolf _ReWolf.
Awoo!